And we are back with episode 669 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, who is hoping that the apple does not fall far from the tree.
Yes, and that would be very good if that were not to happen. We are going to be getting into quite a lot of episodic discussion after we do our usual genre news, and then who knows what kind of open topics we're going to get into. But as I try and get myself back on track here, Edmund, why don't you give a little bit of a disclaimer?
Certainly. We will always try to spoil you with the news. We try to spoil you with goodness and with the episodes. If you haven't watched them, you'll be spoiled.
Indeed. So we are going to get into the genre news. Like I said, first off, here we have some news. It's actually video game news, and this is exciting for those who are also Mass Effect fans. Well, not exciting, but at least some kind of news anyway. It looks like it's going to be a little bit longer before we're going to get our hands on Mass Effect Andromeda. According to EA CFO Blake Jorgensen, the upcoming entry in the long-running sci-fi series is not releasing until the first quarter of 2017. He made that announcement along with revealing the upcoming new Battlefield and Titanfall sequel, as well as Mirror's Edge, before mentioning for Mass Effect, we have our Mirror's Edge runner game this first quarter, then we have Mass Effect, which is a sci-fi action game, in our fourth quarter. That's interesting. It seems to contradict what was said previously in the article, but that's okay. It's true that Mass Effect Andromeda has never been graced with an actual official release date, so maybe we're one step closer now with this quote-unquote announcement. But yeah, it seems like there's some oddities to this particular news.
Yeah.
So it's either first quarter or fourth quarter. I don't know. It's somewhere in that general vicinity. We're already, aren't we?
Yeah, unless it's just the journalists going on experience and knowing that, yes, if that's what they've announced, it probably means a little bit later than that. It's possible. But I'm also amused, given the huge popularity of the game, that he did feel the need to let everybody know it's a sci-fi action game.
That's right. Just in case.
Yes. Just in case you think I'm talking about that other Mass Effect. But.
Yes, Mass Effect. It's an educational game about the Higgs boson.
Yes.
Anyway, moving on then to something that's a little more familiar or hopefully more well put together in terms of the actual article that we're referencing. Edmund.
We have news that Akira, of course, the famed anime and manga, one of those early animes that really sort of put the genre on the map here in the U.S., is apparently going to now be adapted for TV. This is, of course, after the years and years of Warner Brothers trying to get a film adaptation of it off the ground, which is still up in the air. But this is news from the actual author and director, Katsuhiro Otomo, revealed the news at a press conference earlier this year at the Comics Festival Angoulême in Paris, where he was the guest of honor. While there, he was asked if he would consider another adaptation of Akira one day that would go further than what we saw in the original movie, and he shocked everyone, saying a new series was currently under study, which means that it's being considered. Of course, he didn't say anything more than that, so we can just now speculate wildly beyond that. It seems like there's at least a good possibility that the original creator will actually be turning it into a longer form TV series, like the animes that me and John seem to be watching more and more recently, and I would certainly be very much looking forward to that if and when it actually happens.
Absolutely. I think that would be great. I mean, it's been quite some time since the original adaptation, and while that's a classic, it's always nice to revisit some things from those particular days.
Absolutely.
It would be interesting to see what today's kind of animation style would do for that particular property.
Yeah, and also, even though the manga side of things is not something that I've gotten into, at least yet, I did hear that in manga form, there are quite a few stories that go far beyond the film, so there's certainly plenty of material there for a longer-running TV series.
Yes, indeed. I haven't seen the manga myself either, so I couldn't say specifically, but I'm sure that that's the case. Let's see here. Moving on then to our traditional actual networks, both of those previous articles being a bit unassigned, shall we say. We're going to go ahead and talk about CBS. Don't worry. Our usual complaints will come a little later.
Yes.
This is more about the Star Trek revival, which there's been a lot of news about that in recent days. In this particular instance, it's about the addition of Gene Roddenberry's son as another executive producer. So Rod Roddenberry, and Roddenberry Entertainment CEO Trevor Roth have boarded CBO's television revival of the sci-fi franchise as executive producers. They join Alex Kurtzman, Heather Cadine, and Brian Fuller on the project, which will mark the first Star Trek TV series since Enterprise was canceled in 2005. So, yes, there's not a whole lot of news specifically about that beyond what I just mentioned. I just want to see if the other news that I have is down here. It's not. But one interesting aspect of the Star Trek revival, I admit, is that it doesn't mention it here, but apparently it was the subject of a massive bidding war.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And what isn't really apparent is that, Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, all the usual players were willing to throw out a lot of money in order to get the rights to stream the new Star Trek show. And instead they decided to use it as the quote unquote flagship, I guess, for the relaunch of their own CBS Access. So that's interesting to me, because it kind of suggests that this is a much bigger production than we've been led on to believe.
Yes,
and
indeed.
CBS is trying to kind of use this as a lever, which we did think that was the case. But I really felt like they were maybe going to make this a little bit lower budget, and it was not going to be quite on the level of one of these other streaming services. But this suggests maybe not.
Yeah, indeed. And actually, I realized because I did see some of those mentions and articles, but I realized I was misreading them, because I thought they were talking about bidding wars for streaming the actual current series. I didn't realize it was actually for the new series that the other services were trying to get on board for. I've got to say that it within the Trek community, and Rod Roddenberry, I actually do follow their Roddenberry page on Facebook, at the moment there does seem to be a strong sentiment for people saying basically, you know, no, I've already got all these other streaming services, I don't want to pay for another one, even though it's Star Trek, and this is among some pretty hardcore fans. So it does seem that CBS may have a bit of a uphill climb to actually leverage this into the launch that they are hoping for.
Mm. Okay. Here's the article from February 29th, so just the other day. So it says here that CBS CEO Les Moonves says that Netflix and other streaming services were willing to spend at warp speed for the new Star Trek series, which CBS is planning to put on its own over-the-top service, CBS All Access.
Yes.
Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, they all offered us a lot of money. They all wanted it very badly. We could have taken the quick bucks from Netflix, but it shows we're investing in a property we really believe in for the future. So they're betting a lot mm-hmm. on people being willing to do that.
Yep.
I don't know if I would put my money on it. Like you said, it seems a little bit of a... seems unlikely that people are going to be willing to pay again.
Yes.
For yet another service. And what's really interesting with that is that a couple of years ago, I remember when we were first talking about this with Gary, who unfortunately couldn't be here with us tonight, that we were looking at it as if all of these separate network streaming options were kind of getting gobbled up by everybody else. And instead, now what we're seeing is that they were kind of conglomerating, and now they're branching back out again. I guess now that people are seeing that they can get money out of it, mm-hmm. or at least potentially. So we shall find out soon enough what is going to happen with CBS All Access. They may wind up having to, maybe bite their own tongue, eat some crow, and sell it to somebody eventually. But I would hate to see the new Star Trek show get buried because nobody wants to pay for CBS All Access.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be a shame, but it seems like we're going to have to just wait and see for now, because I do see him extremely committed to doing it this way.
Yes. All eggs, one basket.
Yeah.
Moving over to ABC, we have news about about many, many early renewals, but there's only one that we really care about. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has been renewed for a fourth season. Yes, among shows such as Grey's Anatomy, Scandal, How to Get Away with Murder, and Once Upon a Time. I'm just going to pause here for everyone to groan. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the show follows, of course, we know Phil Coulson's S.H.I.E.L.D. team, the Marvel Cinematic Universe's resident spy organization. And so we see that recently, of course, the show has tackled the growing Inhuman problem with Daisy aka Sky, creating a specialized team of Inhuman agents tasked with helping others of their kind as they adjust to their new abilities. It's unclear, however, at this time whether or not Agent Carter, which airs during S.H.I.E.L.D.'s mid-season break period, will also be renewed.
Yes,
there is unfortunately the very good possibility that instead it will be this Mockingbird Hunter spinoff that Marvel's Most Wanted or whatever it was called that could wind up being put into that slot instead. There's quite a bit of buzz that that is the possibility. However, if it turns out that Most Wanted is gets well received and they decide to make that a full season, it could make things a lot more interesting. That was, of course, the possibility that everybody was raging about a year ago. So we shall find out. I don't know, Edmund, do you think that this is more of a filling out the syndication order type of thing? Or is it just the fact that, once again, as we've said many times, ABC/Disney owns Marvel and this really doesn't cost them very much?
Yeah, I think it's perhaps more of the latter. Although not so much the critical reception, but the reception among the fandom, where there were so many people who did not get on board at first, I think has hurt it in its ratings. It seems like more and more people are recognizing that that there has been improvement since those early episodes. I think it is more the fact that it's an in-house property and helps promote the MCU is one of the main reasons why it keeps going. But the actual reception to it has been getting better over the years.
Yeah, I would agree that that's probably the case. I mean, I know a lot more people that have come to the show and at least are begrudgingly saying that it is improved, even though it's clearly much better than it was in its early days. And I still argue that the earliest episodes were just more misinterpreted than bad. But that's me, I guess. All right. Moving on then to our next item here, Edmund, from the cable world.
Yes, this is news from over at TNT that Luc Besson, of course, famous for movies such as The Fifth Element and Lucy and one of my personal favorites, District B-13, which is like a really cool parkour video game brought to life. He has got a pilot commitment from the network, it's called an Artificial Intelligence and follows a artificial intelligence, surprise, surprise, that breaks out of a laboratory in order to embark on its own personal mysterious quest, which might just be hunting down CBS executives. See, I told you we'd get to it eventually. The AI's creator then gathers a team of specialists, of course, to handle the situation. And yeah, I think there's some other people who might have experience in this and might be available soon. But Besson will be co-writing and executive producing, along with screenwriter Bill Wheeler. This is, in fact, his first project for the U.S. market. And would also be the first American television show that he directs should he take on that job as well, which has not yet been announced, since obviously these are quite early days.
Mm-hmm. Don't worry. This isn't the last time you're going to hear us complain about a certain network and their decision-making. Trust me, it's not the last time. Anywho, moving on then to Disney XD. This is interesting news. I want to celebrate this, but at the same time, I'm slightly wary. Mm-hmm. Big Hero 6 is getting a much deserved, quote unquote, here in the title, TV series. Yes, instead of having a series of movies, what they want to do is have a bunch of weekly adventures. The animated series is set to premiere on Disney XD sometime in 2017. It'll pick up right where the movie left off with Hero now famous for the events in the movie and, according to Entertainment Weekly, will face daunting academic challenges and the social trials of being the little man on campus. That's right. We get to watch him in class taking exams. No. Wasabi, Honey Lemon, Fred, and Gogo will obviously also be around. So the name Big Hero 6 still makes sense. Off campus, the stakes are raised for the high-tech heroes as they must protect their city from an array of scientifically enhanced villains. Now, this all sounds really nice and good because I love Big Hero 6. I think it's a great movie. But I really am a little bit worried that what made the movie so good, which was Hero's kind of emotional journey and psychological journey, is going to get lost in a weekly TV series. I think it's just going to become a kind of recitation of kind of semi-mediocre adventures. And I kind of hope it doesn't. I mean, I'd really rather they kind of take a lot more care with this, but I can understand. There is the enduring popularity of Baymax, so I know why they want to do it, but I'm a little wary.
Yeah, I know. I got that film. I actually still have not caught. Although I know certainly from people's reactions to it, it's one I should pick up at some point. But just in general, I mean, from what I've heard about it, it does seem that the translation to a short form TV series might be a little tricky.
Well, yeah, just the fact that it is kind of a recitation on loss and depression is—it's just how are you going to take that and just make it a bunch of stock weekly adventures without losing some of the depth? I mean, maybe you know, it's kind of like you know, there are certain aspects to Frozen that I feel like got lost in translation when it kind of became a huge franchise thing versus just one story, so. But I think Big Hero 6 was a much more rich film in terms of the content.
Mm-hmm.
But, we shall find out, I suppose, because, it's coming in 2017. All right, Edmund, one last bit of cable-related news.
Yes, this is over at AMC. Another news of a new series. And this is apparently AMC jumping onto the anthology bandwagon that FX has been riding with American Horror Story and American Crime Story. AMC is looking to do an anthology drama series called The Terror, based on a best-selling novel by Dan Simmons, and will represent a departure from the post-apocalyptic and contemporary shows currently in the network's lineup, Walking Dead, of course, as it will take viewers back to 1847, when a Royal Naval Expedition crew searching for the Northwest Passage is attacked by a mysterious predator that stalks the ships and their crew in a suspenseful and desperate game of survival. I'm thinking kind of the thing on the high seas. It has already gotten a full season order. It'll be a 10-episode series, and this also set to premiere in 2017. That's a popular year for us this week. It comes from Scott Free, which is Ridley Scott's production company, Ridley will himself executive produce alongside David W. Zucker, both of whom helped develop The Man in the High Castle over at Amazon. And showrunner will be David Kajanik, who is writing the series, along with Sue Hugh, who worked on The Killing, I presume the American version. In their release, AMC said, "Originality is still something that gets our attention every day, and the very unique mixing of historical nonfiction with a gripping and imaginative science fiction overlay in Dan's novel is something that we hadn't seen before. That, combined with an exceptional team behind the project, made this something we really wanted to bring to AMC." That does sound quite intriguing. I will be looking forward to that.
Yeah, AMC has a pretty good track record, but so does Dan Simmons. I believe that he is not just known for his horror novels, but I believe, if I look to my right, yes, he is also the one who is responsible for Hyperion.
Absolutely, yep.
The Hyperion Cantos. So I know that was also a really great saga right there. So this is something that I think makes a lot of sense. His material needs to be on the screen as much as possible.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I believe Hyperion's one of those that's been in sort of, it's been talked about for years for somebody trying to adapt it, but has not made it yet. But maybe if this is successful, that might add some impetus to that.
Yes, it's quite possible. All right, and now we move into movie news. And Edmund, do you have the first one here?
Certainly. We have news of a new Predator movie, and believe it or not, this will not be a reboot. The latest installment, possibly called The Predator, has been described by director and co-writer Shane Black as an inventive sequel. All of these previous sequels may not have been quite up to the promise of the original, with the creative team on this one, Shane Black is writing the treatment. Fred Decker, who wrote Monster Squad, will be handling the actual script, and Mr. Black will be directing. Currently has a release date of March 2nd, 2018, but certainly anything 2 years out like that, and the way they tend to shuffle things around, who knows whether they will actually meet that or not. But approximately 2 years from now, we may be seeing the Predator on our screens again.
Okay. And it won't be an Alien versus Predator film, which is probably good for everyone involved.
Absolutely.
All right. Moving on then over to Fox. This is kind of interesting. Fox has announced two untitled new Marvel films, and they have pulled Gambit from a 2016 release date. That's going to make anyone who was hoping that Gambit was coming later this year a little unhappy. But seeing how that that Gambit has yet to start filming, it's probably no big surprise that it's not going to be able to come out in October. So the film is scheduled to start filming next month, which would then put its release sometime in 2017, according to producer Simon Kinberg. That means that an untitled Fox Marvel film will be released in October 2017. That could be Gambit. Last month, Tatum unveiled his new Gambit look at the Golden Globe Awards, so whether or not he will maintain it for that long, who knows. The project was originally scheduled to start filming back in November, but then the director dropped out, so they still have yet to announce the new director. So as far as other dates go, there is also an updated or an untitled film for release in January 12th, 2018. There is a great deal of speculation that that is going to be Deadpool 2, since it did so well in January of 2016.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, February anyway. Winter.
Close
we'll
enough.
Just say winter.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah, so they're thinking, okay, Deadpool 2, X-Force, who knows? But it's a lot of speculation over the fact that dates are being shuffled around. Let's put it that way. Any other comment on that one?
Yeah. Well, I actually find it rather canny, this thing of releasing it in January February timeframe. It's that is very often the sort of dumping ground where a lot of the films that once they're made and get screened and they realize aren't that good often come out. It's that weird scheduling of where you have to get all the awards films at the end of the year and then the beginning of the year comes out and you're left with a bunch of dreck usually. So it was an interesting move for them to bring Deadpool out in the midst of all that, so it could be that movie that everybody had to see when there really was nothing else on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it kind of came right at the perfect time to slot right in where nothing else was coming out. So, like you said, it's usually a dumping ground. So I guess they hedged their bets pretty well. They figured if it didn't do well, it was during a time of year when they didn't have high expectations anyway.
Exactly.
And then it dominated. All right. Actually, I'm going to take my next one because it's kind of in similar vein, and then we can kind of backtrack a little bit.
Sure.
Over at Sony, despite the fact that the whole Spider-Man cinematic universe they were trying to create was kind of blown completely up, it doesn't look like Fox is just ready to give up on the Spider-Man-related franchise after all. So on Friday, that it being today, The Hollywood Reporter broke the news that Sony, having sent Spider-Man off to play with the Marvel Cinematic Universe, is looking to revitalize another part of its franchise, Venom. In order to bring the fan-favorite comic book character to life, Sony has enlisted Dante Harper to pen the script, Nerdist has learned. What's particularly interesting is that it will not connect to the Tom Holland starring Spider-Man film that's currently in the works. Rather, this is going to exist alongside that film, but remain separate. The hope is that the new Venom film won't just stand on its own, but it will launch its own franchise. What?
Yeah.
Sony. Stick to PlayStation. Anyway, given the havoc that Venom tends to wreak, this is fascinating. It could allow Sony to create a more adult superhero film akin to Deadpool. Gee, you think that's maybe what they're going for? I think so. We'll have a little bit more talk on this particular kind of topic later on. But so they are trying to still salvage some vestige of their Spider-Man franchise, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a little strange. I mean, for a character that was certainly intimately connected to Spider-Man at one point. It also seems deeply ironic since, part of what sunk Spider-Man 3 was, as far as I was concerned, trying to shove Venom in there on top of everything else. I mean, that film was just way too overstuffed and Venom deserved more of a standalone film with Spider-Man, but this idea of trying to make Venom a whole franchise on its own does seem like stretching the concept a little bit too far.
Just a bit. All right, so next we have an interesting YA, or attempt at another YA franchise, maybe?
It certainly seems so. This is news that there's a new time-traveling novel series called Tempest. The film rights to author Julie Cross's YA trilogy has been optioned by a studio, and this is one of those lovely articles where it's not being clear which studio it is, but here we go. Cross Pictures, no relation to the author, but this is a trilogy that is time-bending story fixated on themes of struggles against conspiracies, romance, and tragic fatalism. First entry in 2012 was Tempest, a novel, followed by Vortex and 2014's Time Storm. Main character is 19-year-old Jackson Meyer, a college student in 2009 with a girlfriend Holly and a seemingly normal life, and of course, though he just happens to possess the mysterious innate ability to travel through time. While the internet has espoused the notion that safety is not guaranteed for trips of that nature, especially when it comes to the timeline, Jackson's space-time sojourns are usually harmless, inciting no changes. However, when a mysterious group busts in on him and his love, resulting in her death, a desperate act finds him stuck 2 years in the past in 2007 and unable to get back. And of course then completely focuses on trying to prevent Holly's death, but all leading to rather perplexing scenarios where her would-be assailants actually attempt to recruit him to stop a dangerous group called the Enemies of Time. Eventually, clues about his father and abilities start to get interwoven into his increasingly difficult death-averting agenda. This has basically just been optioned. There's no word yet about any personnel involved or dates. This is this also seems like a relatively new studio. Brothers Scott and Sean Cross, they've got a couple of the people, Mimi Polk Gitlin involved, who collaborated with Ridley Scott on Thelma and Louise. So certainly somebody looks like a new studio trying to make a big splash, and we will just have to see if this is the new Hunger Games or more along the lines of Maze Runner and Divergent in being made, but perhaps not quite as successful as the big boys.
Indeed. I don't know if it's a little late in the game to kind of try to get a YA franchise going, but if the story's good and the production is solid, usually it works out. But there is a glut of that right now.
There certainly is.
However, there's this other property that deserves to get some kind of good adaptation, no matter how unlikely it may be, but Edmund, if you don't mind.
Certainly. We have news of the adaptation from New Line Cinemas of Neil Gaiman's Sandman. This had been sort of off the radar for a little while, but we now have news that horror writer Eric Heiserer has been brought on to write the script. Director and star is going to be Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Originally, David Goyer had written a treatment, then the filmmakers have been basically taking that treatment around and trying to find the perfect writer to tackle the first film in what they hope will become a trilogy. With 75 issues of the original series, it could definitely be at least a trilogy. And if this really takes off, I could certainly see many, many movies coming out about this. The writer Eric Heiserer has two films in production: The Conjuring 2 and Lights Out. He was also behind Final Destination 5, as well as remakes of The Thing and A Nightmare on Elm Street. So certainly a lot of experience in the genre. He's also penned the script for Sicario director Denis Villeneuve's new film, The Story of Your Life, a science fiction story starring Amy Adams. Certainly it's one of my favorite graphic novel series of all time, plenty of material there. So we're just keeping our fingers crossed that the film does it justice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess it's one of those things, like I said, I'm hoping it gets a good adaptation, but it is going to be challenging to do it full justice. All right, and that means that we are going to move on to that ever popular segment, Casting news, that's right. And we're going to start off with something that's kind of a hybrid between just general news about the series and casting. More about DC's Powerless. NBC is joining the ranks of networks banking on DC properties, bringing this Office-style sitcom to the fall schedule. They've ordered a pilot featuring Vanessa Hudgens, as we've said before, and now they've added Alan Tudyk and Danny Pudi to the actual cast, along with Christina Kirk from A to Z. Tudyk will be playing the new boss in the company, while Pudi is our heroine's best friend. Reports indicate that while some DC favorites will be featured, don't look for Batman or Superman to appear anytime soon. Now, what makes this a little bit interesting is that ABC is currently working on a similar series with Marvel about a cleaning crew tasked with taking care of messes left behind by Earth's Mightiest Heroes called Damage Control, which I know we had heard a little bit about that, but I didn't realize that they were still working on that. As it says here, it's an interesting premise for a sitcom and plays right into the current cultural obsession with the genre. It also answers the question that everybody has wondered about. What happens after that final alien vessel crash lands into a local landmark?
Yes, and anybody who's been to Dragon Con, of course, the moment I heard about Damage Control, I just immediately thought of the sci-fi janitors.
Oh, boy, we could make so many references. I'll leave that to Gary and Bronstein. Yes. They're a little more, shall we say, intimately familiar with the topic at hand. Anyway, moving on then to some news from the CW.
We have news. Deadline is reporting that Georgina Hague, of course from Fringe, and Neil Bledsoe, who is currently in Mysteries of Laura, have been cast in a new CW pilot about the first human colony on Mars. No title yet. Pilot will be written by Dara Segan, who is currently working on Rain, one of the other CW properties. And it's going to be a thriller following a team of explorers who are on a mission to join a human colony on Mars, only to discover that everyone is missing. Now this team must figure out what happened to the colonists before it's too late. Hague will be playing Gina Nolan, the mission's botanist. Bledsoe plays Lewis, whose job it is to recruit the explorers who will join him on his mission to Mars. Other cast members include Muzan Makar, Carl Bukes, Tongaya Charissa, and Peter Mark Kendall. And no credits given for any of those people, so you'll have to look them up on IMDb yourself. Another step in the CW's push for more genre-focused programming, joining the lineup currently including, of course, shows we are all familiar with, Arrow, Flash, Legends of Tomorrow, The 100, and Supernatural. More news on those later this week.
That's right. Quite a bit news, in fact. All right. Moving on then to Fox and the second season of Wayward Pines. It would seem that fan favorite Carlo Gugino is going to be... did I say that one right? I hate trying to pronounce names. Anyway, we all know what she looks like. We know who she is. Anyway, it seemed to end the first season all but sealing the fate of that particular actress's character, but it seems like she'll be back. She actually posted a picture of herself on the set in Vancouver, so that would seem to indicate that Kate Hewson, who was cryogenically frozen at the end of the first season, spoilers, is going to be making it into the second season, which jumps 3 years into the future. So I guess she's going to be unfrozen, maybe, possibly.
Yeah, that seems like a good bet.
Yes, and it seems like she's not the only one who's going to be back. Also, Melissa Leo is going to be reprising her role as Nurse Pam, while Charlie Tan will be once again playing Ben, the son of Ethan Burke, who won't be returning.
No.
Both actors are expected to appear only in a limited capacity, so maybe flashbacks, maybe not.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Maybe Kate's flashbacks? You never know. So yes, it's going to be a 10-episode second season. And yeah, it seems like the residents of Wayward Pines are going to battle against the rule of the first generation. And if you didn't watch the first season, you have no idea what I'm talking about. But if you did watch it, you're actually wondering, what could the second season be all about? And probably looking forward to this summer.
Indeed.
Oh, now here's some interesting news about a movie that either people are looking really forward to or really waiting to revile.
Yes. Well, this is news of the Ghost in the Shell adaptation. And after all of the cries about whitewashing and lack of Asian actors playing an Asian story, they have finally cast an actual Asian actor. Beat Takeshi will be joining the cast, play as Aramaki, of course, the chief of Public Security Section 9, and somewhat amusing that the actor himself actually is not a fan of anime or manga, but at least they have actually brought in an actual Japanese man to play a Japanese man. So that's something. I would put myself in the camp that I am looking forward to this. It turns out Beat Takeshi is not a complete stranger to Hollywood science fiction. He did appear in Johnny Mnemonic back in 1995, and is one of those movies that I think gets an unfair reputation. Let's just put it that way. I think it's actually better than people remember it.
That wouldn't be difficult.
Yeah,
but there we are. All right. Well, despite the fact that he is going to be relatively busy for a little while, supposedly, or he was a little busy on the set of Game of Thrones, Ian McShane is also going to be starring in some capacity in American Gods for the Stars Network. He is going to be playing the role of Mr. Wednesday. If you've read the book, you know what I mean. American Gods, if you're not familiar, is a drama centering on a war brewing between old and new gods, the traditional gods of biblical and mythological roots from around the world, steadily losing believers to an upstart pantheon of gods reflecting society's modern love of money, technology, media, celebrity, and drugs. Its protagonist, Shadow Moon, is an ex-con who welcomes bodyguard and traveling partner to, or becomes bodyguard and traveling partner to Mr. Wednesday, a con man whose identity, I suppose, you'll have to find out by watching the show. We're reading this article more, which I won't do. I won't do that to you if you are unfamiliar with the story.
Yes.
Either read the book or watch the show. I'm not going to spoil it. All those things, because they are things that kind of happen later in the book. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, but just in general, I mean, the overall description of Mr. Wednesday as powerful and charismatic, a Casanova of sorts, certainly does seem to be almost written precisely for Mr. McShane. So it looks very good casting, I would say.
Will he be delivering dialogue like on Deadwood? That's the question. It's possible. It's Stars. Okay, moving back over to FX, and a lot of news that has come out about the cast of the X-Men-based Legion series. It seems like Katie Asselton from The League is going to be joining Legion as well. All we know is that her character is going to have the name Amy. We don't know more about that at all, but there we are. So just as we all know, there's a whole lot of people that have been attached to this, and production on the pilot will begin in March. And let's see. Oh,
yes.
And that means we're ready to talk about the thing.
This is good. Well, even though CBS has still not officially announced anything about when Person of Interest might return, whether it will return beyond that, but in a roundabout way, this is perhaps news that is foreshadowing what that decision actually is. Sarah Shahi, of course, Shaw on Person of Interest, will be starring in CBS's contemporary reimagining of the Nancy Drew mystery novels. She will be playing the title character, now working as a detective for the NYPD, investigating crimes using her uncanny observational skills, all while navigating the life in the modern world. While the character of Shaw has been, her exact fate in Person of Interest has been a little bit up in the air, it would certainly seem to not bode well if we have major members of the cast taking on whole other series. As far as Nancy Drew goes, there has been previous casting news. Anthony Edwards will be playing her father, Carson, Vanessa Ferlito, her best friend, George, and Felix Solis, a fellow detective. And this could be CBS in a backhanded way, just confirming what we've all been pretty certain of, that even if Person of Interest continues, it is definitely not going to be on CBS.
Yeah, it's looking more and more dire.
Yeah, it's also just the fact that I think they are still doing a little bit of post production over on the Person of Interest Twitter feed. So there have been occasional postings about doing some ADR work, but there also been a few posts of where they really are wrapping up the post production on all 13 of the episodes that are in the can, and people are going to be moving on and having to get new jobs since there has been no word from Person of Interest. about Person of Interest. So it's going to be awfully difficult to get the gang back together at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with that. I think it's fairly obvious at this point, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But we'll have to see what it looks like when it finally airs in terms of wrapping up the series. I think they had to know the writing was on the wall.
Oh, they did. Yeah, they absolutely did. And they've kind of said this, and it is kind of true. I mean, they've kind of treated each season finale and tried to do it as an episode that could potentially be a series finale. But I think especially for this one, and having the shorter episode order, just the 13 episodes, where they didn't have to worry about doing any filler episodes and could just just have a single serialized story basically going all the way through it. I am certainly looking forward to it. I think they were definitely doing this with an eye to it quite possibly being the end.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it certainly seems so. All right. That means that unfortunately we have to move into that one segment that we wish we didn't ever have to do, but 2016 has been harsh.
Yes, it has.
To say the least. So, Edmund, if you could take the first bit here.
Certainly. This week we lost George Kennedy, star of Cool Hand Luke and the Naked Gun movies. He died at the age of 91. It was reported by his grandson, Corey Schenkel, died early Sunday morning in Boise. He had been in failing health ever since his wife had died a little over a year ago, and for the past month had in fact been under hospice care. And he did actually win an Oscar in 1968 for Cool Hand Luke, he's another of those actors who was just in many film roles throughout, particularly the 70s and 80s, all three Naked Gun films, Airport 1975, Earthquake, and in fact was still working up until 2014. His last role was in The Gambler with Mark Wahlberg. So, one of those great character actors. And, sad to see him go, along with all of the others we have lost this year.
Mm-hmm. And now we have one more to add to the list as Tony Dyson, who built the original R2-D2 units for Star Wars, has passed away at the age of 68. Reports from BBC News say that Dyson's body was found by police at his home on the Maltese island of Gozo after they received a call from a concerned neighbor. He's believed to have died of natural causes. While R2-D2 was designed by concept artist Ralph McQuarrie, it was up to Dyson to build the 8 models of the beloved droid, plus the master molds and an additional head, 4 remote-controlled units, 2 of which actor Kenny Baker could sit in, and 2 throwaways used in the Dagobah bog scene in The Empire Strikes Back. So, yes, it was reportedly one of the most exciting periods of his career. So yes, he was quite proud to have been involved with R2-D2 over those years. And other film credits include Superman 2, Moonraker, Dragon Slayer, and Altered States. In recent years, he had worked more as a motivational speaker. So yeah, unfortunately, yet another genre-related passing.
Yes, indeed, and another of those where it felt a little too soon at 68. So this in this day and age that used to be a fairly normal lifespan, but nowadays that feels a little soon.
Mm-hmm. Indeed, it does. These segments always so sad, but what are you going to do? What we're going to do now is end up this particular episode, and what we'll do next time is get into our episodic discussion. Thankfully, the list is just a little bit shorter than it's been in recent weeks, so we may be able to get through it in one episode. We'll find out, but until next time.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.